Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to Red Ice Creations Radio. My name is Henrik Palmgren. The website is redicecreations.com. Thank you very much for tuning in. Today we have an urgent issue that we want to cover, so pay close attention, please, especially if you're in the UK and in around Yorkshire. Tomorrow, July 2nd, between 10 a.m. and 11:30, David Icke is holding a press conference taking questions from the media, because he is standing with David Davis in the upcoming parliamentary Big Brother by-election. And we have David with us on the line to tell us more about this. David, it's great to have you back on the program again. Tell us where you are and what the heck is going on.
Hello, Henrik. What the heck's going on? It's my life. Who knows? I'm up in a constituency within the parliamentary system in Britain, near a place called Hull on the East Coast. And I'm standing in a by-election which has come about in a way that's very relevant to what I've been doing for the last 20 years. The opposition Home Affairs spokesman, a man called David Davis, who you mentioned, resigned his seat in Parliament just a few weeks ago, maybe a couple of weeks ago, in protest at the emerging Big Brother state in Britain. And this culminated in the manipulation by the government through outrageous means, a law which is going to allow the police to hold people, quote, terrorist suspects, for up to 42 days without charge and without any need to present them with any reason why they are being held. I was not going to stand in this election. I've never stood in an election, and I never will again. This is about Big Brother. But I was not going to stand if the government party here, the Labour Party, had stood against him. They chose not to, for a very simple reason. They'd have got slaughtered, because people are now in ever larger numbers becoming aware that Big Brother ain't coming. He's here. And in Britain, it's now going into the fine detail of people's lives, as it is elsewhere. The reason I'm standing is because David Davis is dealing with this on one level. He's saying that we must stop the Labour government in power currently, once headed by Blair, now by a guy called Gordon Brown,
right,
bringing in the Big Brother state. Now, if that's the level, the only level that we operate on, then we're going nowhere, because the Big Brother state is global. It's happening in country after country after country at the same time.
Yeah.
And therefore, is the Labour government in Britain responsible for it happening in America and in Canada and in Sweden, in France, in Germany? I had a German film crew come to talk to me a few days ago, and they were going on and on about the fact that the Big Brother state's coming in Germany.
Yeah.
Is it happening because of the Labour government in Australia? The point being that what David Davis is focusing on, while admirable and commendable that he's taken this stance, if it becomes just a party political thing, like we must stop the Labour government doing this, then basically we're going nowhere. And so I'm standing to make the point that Big Brother is much bigger than David Davis appears to understand. And we have to ask the question, what is the coordinating force that is making this happen all over the world at the same time? Because it certainly ain't the Labour government. The Labour government in Britain is the vehicle for it being introduced in this country, but it's only that. It's like focusing on the oil rag and missing the engineer.
Right.
And the engineer is this network of bloodline families, which I've been exposing now for the best part of two decades. And that's the point I'm standing to make. Not to win. I have no desire to win. If I, by some miracle of miracles, won, I'd be on the next plane to South America, because the last thing I want to do is to get caught in that web of deceit and mendacity and corruption that is the Westminster Parliament, and indeed every other parliament, it seems to me.
Well, exactly.
It's not about winning. If I get zero votes, fine, it don't matter to me, as long as people have registered through David Davis or me a protest against the Big Brother state. But even more than that, have registered within themselves that this is not just about one government in one country. I think we've talked before, Henrik, about the way I've described how you could control an apparently two-party state simply by manipulating mayhem and infighting within the party that you don't want to win at that time.
Right.
If you've got two parties, and what's happened in this country is that back in the 80s, the Labour Party was, or the late 70s actually, the Labour Party was brought into total disarray, infighting, battling in on itself, and was throughout the 1980s, from 1979 when Margaret Thatcher got in, right the way through to the mid-90s, was considered unelectable by the people because of its infighting and because of the lack of credibility of the people that rose to become its leader. And therefore, through the 1980s, Margaret Thatcher got more and more unpopular, and the Tory government got more and more unpopular. But people were saying, well, what can you do? You know, we don't want to vote for her, but, you know, look, what's the alternative? We got no choice.
Right.
And then in the mid-90s, a guy called Tony Blair was made leader of the then opposition Labour Party, at which point everything changed. Rupert Murdoch's newspapers, for the first time in their history, switched their support to Blair. Blair became leader of the Labour Party, and in 1997, whereby now the Conservative Party was full of infighting, was in disarray, and collapsing in on itself, Blair came to power, and he stayed there for 10 years, invading people, bringing in this Big Brother state at an alarming rate.
Yeah, yeah.
And people were saying, we don't want to vote for him, but you can't vote for the Conservatives. Look at the state they're in.
Right,
and
right.
Now, with Blair gone and replaced by this guy, Gordon Brown, there is a daily campaign, to destroy the credibility of Gordon Brown and the Labour Party, because there's a guy called David Cameron from David Davis's party, funnily enough, who is the next chosen one to come in and take over.
Is that
and
so?
There's a simple rule with this two-party manipulation I've just described. Whichever party is in government introduces the agenda for the Orwellian state. Whichever party is in opposition opposes it. Then we have an election, a farce of an election. They change places, and then the government that introduced the agenda is now the opposition party, so it opposes it, and vice versa. And that's how it works. And we have another point that I want to make in as a result of this election, which is David Davis is focusing on surveillance cameras and DNA databases, and quite right, too. That's a fundamental part of this Orwellian state.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not. It's only one level of it. The European Union is a massive part of this Big Brother state. Because what is the Big Brother state? It's the few dictating to the lives and controlling the lives of the many.
Yep.
And that's what the European Union is designed to do. And just to make the point that I've just made about this two-party state manipulation, at the moment, David Davis's Conservative Party is opposing the introduction of this Lisbon Treaty, which is just the European Constitution under another name, which again highly significantly move forward the centralization of power in Europe. And yet when that Conservative Party was in power, it did exactly the same and forced through Britain's consent to the Maastricht Treaty, which was an enormous step forward of the centralization of power in Europe. So there's many of these much bigger Big Brother issues that people need to see how the dots connect.
Yeah.
If we're really going to have a chance of putting this right through mass civil non-cooperation with this system of enslavement, and so that's why I'm standing. And unfortunately, I've invited David Davis to a public debate so we can talk about this, not in a you know, me against you, but to mutually challenging the Big Brother state now from our different perspectives.
Right.
And he doesn't want to know.
Really? Is that so? But what you're saying here is that you're because of this action, by standing in this election, you're helping to draw more attention to the issue of the Big Brother state. Do I understand that correctly then?
Exactly, Henrik. Yeah, right. I mean, you know, I've got this press conference tomorrow, and I've got a public meeting, which is free for anyone to come, by the way. It's in a place called, I've got the name of the place now, but it's just outside Hull. If people go to my website,
it's Willoughby Manor Hotel,
yeah,
right?
Willoughby, that's it.
On Well Lane.
Willoughby Manor Hotel at Willoughby, and people can come. It starts at 1:30 on Sunday. And we're going to, you know, go through all of this and then take questions. So
brilliant.
It's about raising the profile of this whole issue. And the election is just that vehicle for me. I have no desire to win. I have no chance to win. David Davis will win. He was always going to win. But this is much bigger than what he's talking about. And it's very important that people understand that.
So on some points you agree with David Davis, I reckon, then. But in many points you disagree on a lot of issues, right?
Well, I commend absolutely his decision to step down as an MP and seek re-election on the issue of Big Brother. Hold my hand up to that. What I'm saying is... it's much bigger than what he's saying. And also, you know, there are so many elements to Big Brother that are more than just surveillance cameras and databases. For instance, David Davis supports capital punishment while being, he says, against Big Brother. Well, I can't imagine a more Big Brother situation than to give a man in a funny wig the right over life and death of another human being on behalf of the state.
Right.
He also supported the invasion of Iraq. Mm. Now, I wonder if those civilians and children in Baghdad, when it was being pepper bombed from the sky, might just have thought that Big Brother had arrived. So it's very important that we connect the dots and see how these things fit, because if we don't, then we're going to be debating about a small area and not see the big picture of how it all connects together, because everything from the economic system to the medical system, right the way through to what we're talking about with banking, with surveillance cameras, with the European Union, all these things connect to form the global, all-encompassing Big Brother that David Davis doesn't seem to see.
Mm. And I mean, is there a specific angle you need to have on this? I mean, you have about an hour and a half then, I guess, during this press conference at least, to kind of get things going. But is there, you know, enough time to get into all of these? I mean, this, again, is a massive subject. And as you know, who make, you know, six-hour lectures to connect the dots, is it possible to you know, open people's eyes on this short
time? Yeah, it is. What I'm doing is I'm just taking that level of Big Brother where people experience it daily. Not just in surveillance cameras, like I say, but also in the economic situation they face, and all these other different areas of people's lives, which it all connects into. And if you could connect the dots, people can start to see that, hey, I can see how that fits with that. Oh, yeah, I can see why they do that now. So I'm just keeping it at that level. And you know, I can do that in an hour and a half quite easily by... making it clear how apparently unconnected subjects, people, organizations, and events are actually connected in a very, very obvious way and blatant way.
Yeah.
Once you look at what the agenda is and the techniques the agenda uses to advance itself. Once you talk about problem, reaction, solution, and these techniques of manipulation, the totalitarian tiptoe, where they go in little steps, or as big as they can get away with, but relatively little steps towards a long-agreed goal in the distance, and that's how we went from a free trade area in Europe to a centralized superstate, because we'd have never accepted it if we went to the superstate straight away.
Indeed,
but once these things are explained to people, most people say, yeah, well, you know, I do see it's possible, and that is at least a start.
And, you know, it feels like we actually are in a way on the right track here. I mean, since Ireland, their referendum on the Lisbon Treaty, I mean, that was wonderful. They voted no. It seems to be at this point, though, that they're going to ram it down our throats anyway. We'll see what's going to happen here. But at least it feels like actually, in many cases, the people are very much, you know, against this centralization of power as it is right now. Would you agree on that?
Oh, yes. Let's look at it in an even greater perspective. They are increasingly feeling anxious and concerned about the way the world's going, with a fraction of the information made available to them to see what's really going on. Even at the level of the information they get through the mainstream media, people are starting to get more and more concerned about the way the world's going and the way, like I say, the fine detail of their lives is being impacted by the state and local authorities. We had a guy this week who was fined £100 by a local authority for putting a card in his own car saying it was for sale.
Really?
He was prosecuted under a law that stopped street trading. we've had people fined hundreds of pounds for putting their wheelie rubbish bin out on the wrong day, because and sometimes an hour's from the right day. It's extraordinary. People are prosecuted for feeding the birds.
Right.
I mean. And what happens, Henrik, is that the newspapers, because these stories are so outrageous, some of the newspapers report them, and then the next week they'll report some more, and the next week they'll report some more, and then they'll also report that another story from this week that a secret report has come to light through the New York Times, which has shown that the British authorities are in the process of agreeing to share not only the DNA database, but all financial details, details of where British people went on the internet and et cetera, with the CIA in America,
yes,
and that the European Union is in the process of doing the same.
Yeah.
Now, they'll run that story. They'll run the story about the guy selling his car and all the rest of it. What they don't do is connect the dots, and 'cause they don't seem to ask the obvious question. The speed and the breadth of the changes that are mirroring what Orwell wrote about are so fast and so wide. Are you really telling me this is happening by accident? Are you really a coincidence theorist to that extent?
Yeah.
But because the dots are not connected, people just see it as this random, quote, state imposing itself on them. But it's not that. There is a force behind it that's working through the state to create a global enslaved population, right down in the end to not being able to think without those thoughts having the potential to be read. I mean, this technology is already being developed.
That's right. Yeah. No, exactly.
So,
I mean,
so these are the big, big brother issues that Mr. Davis was not going to talk about, and I'm standing in this election to do.
Brilliant. And regarding, you know, tell us a little bit how the British system works here. Can people register then and vote for you or for David in this case?
What happens is the British Isles is broken up into what they call constituencies, and they return a member of parliament from each constituency. So this by-election is happening in a constituency near Hull in the northeast of England, and anyone who is registered to vote in that constituency can vote for any of the candidates that are standing. Anyone else in Britain can't, because it's this single constituency that it's focused on, because this is the one that Davis represents, and therefore this is where he must seek re-election from. And he'll win. The question is, what will the turnout be when it's not an election where the other big parties are standing?
Yeah.
And how many votes will people register against the big brother state? I hope it's significant, but you never know, because, you know, people are so apathetic so often.
Yeah.
And you know, as I'm saying to people, you know, one day you're going to have to look your children and grandchildren in the eyes without blinking, if you can, when they ask the question, what were you doing, mummy, daddy, granddad, grandma, when the fascist state came in that now controls every aspect of my life? What were you doing?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
After 20 years of this, I'll be able to give an answer without blinking. But so many others will say, well, I did nothing. Hmm. Journalists in the mainstream will have to say, well, I helped it.
Yeah.
Politicians, I voted for it.
Hmm.
These are the things that we're going to have to face unless we stand up now, join together, forget the irrelevant fault lines of divide and rule, like race and religion and income bracket and political persuasion, and realize that this Big Brother global state is not for Jewish people or Islamic people or British people or Australians or black people or whatever. It's not for middle class or working class. It's for everybody. And unless we unite to challenge this and refuse to cooperate with this attempt to enslave us, then that enslavement will naturally unfold. It's unfolded now by the hour, not even by the day. This is a crossroads. This is a crossroads that we really, or even more appropriately, a fork in the road.
Yeah.
And if we keep going down the direction we're going now, we'll live in a global fascist state within 10 years because it's going so fast now, but the more you centralize power, the more power you have to centralize even quicker. So the momentum of centralization is not a constant speed. It gets faster and faster and faster. And it's that we're in that situation now. And so what it may have taken 20 years to get to a point that we're at now, it's going to take five or less to get to that same distance again. And in 10 years, we'll be in a global fascist state unless we face what we need to face now and join in unity to resist it.
Indeed. And I think that the key in this case is information and, if you will, kind of education in these subjects, just to highlight what the heck is going on. And as you say, very important to just make the connections between all of these. You know, as you said, the reporting happens in the mainstream press, right? They're reporting on it, but don't comment on it. What needs to be done is this comment on these subjects so people realize what the heck is going on. Because again, people are very distracted. They're stressed for time. You know, everything is limited, you know, and the politicians increasingly tell us, you know, there's tons of stuff to worry about, right? The money is running out and soon there won't even be food, you know. So we're kind of drawn down to this very kind of base and almost a primal level at this point. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, and it's no accident that at this time where they're gearing up for this final thrust to their global state, that they are crashing the global economy, that they are manipulating food production and distribution so prices are going up and it's becoming more scarce, or at least they tell us it is.
Right, right.
Because fear is the greatest manipulator of people to give their power away, because people give their power away in fear of something to those they believe will protect them from what they fear. And it's interesting in this country at the moment that we have resisted through public rejection and through pressure group rejection the introduction of genetically modified food.
Mm-hmm.
But as a result of this food crisis quote that we're told about, the Labour government is now saying we must look again at genetically modified crops to overcome the food crisis, problem, reaction, solution. And so this is not a coincidence that all these things are being thrown at us at the same time, because they want to create the chaos out of which they can create their new order, their new world order, which is this centralized state. Oh, the world's in chaos. We've got financial crisis, food crisis, oil crisis, terrorism crisis, global warming crisis. We have to have a world centralized authority that can act and coordinate on behalf of everybody.
Yeah, that's right.
And alongside of this, of course, we're getting this common theme that's I hear all the time now, international law. We need international law to overcome the international problems. Hmm. And international law is a law that everyone on the planet has to obey, exactly what is necessary for a world government to impose its authority.
Indeed. And I mean, it's incredible, this thing with the European Union as well. And we can see that, what this guy called, Valéry d'Estaing, I think. I don't know if I pronounce
Valéry
his last
name. Valéry d'Estaing, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically the architect of the European Constitution, the old one that the Dutch and the French voted out in 2005. But now he's coming back again and said, you know, no problem, just rush this through and every country should vote in the new, basically the Lisbon Treaty. And we'll see what happens there. But what is interesting, of course, is that Valéry is a Knight of Malta, and we have to make these kind of connections. Who are the people behind the scenes running this and pushing this agenda, right?
Yeah, well, Valéry d'Estaing was in my books from the very early days. He's a stalwart, or certainly was, of the Bilderberg Group, which is one of the elite strands in the web. And he has been pushing for the centralization of power in Europe for decades, because he's a front man for the game.
Yeah.
And he was basically, as you rightly point out, the architect of the original European Constitution. And I quote in my latest book, from him, from documents that were seen by a Russian dissident who came to the West, in which he and David Rockefeller and Henry Kissinger had a meeting with Gorbachev when he was the leader of Russia. And he told him, this is Valéry d'Estaing, told Gorbachev that there was going to be a unified, centrally controlled European state within, I think it was 15 years, 17 years, something like that.
Hmm.
And so we'd better get used to it. And if the Dutch and the French had not have voted against that constitution that was going to bring in what Giscard d'Estaing prophesied, then he would have been spot on with the number of years he said at that time it would take to bring it in.
Right.
So they're a little bit off their time scale because of the Dutch and French vote, and now because of the Irish vote. But as I've been saying for years, Henrik, there's a simple rule with this agenda for the Orwellian state. The agenda does not take no for an answer.
That's right.
And you know when it's the agenda, because even though people have rejected something and said, no, we don't want that, we're not having that, they'll just keep coming back or ignoring those wishes or coming back for another vote or finding another way of getting round the opposition, because the agenda is the thing that matters to them. Public opinion is irrelevant. It's just the thing that gets in the way.
Yeah.
and it's the same with, like I say, with genetically modified food. It's the agenda. So they're not going to just listen to public opinion not wanting it. They're going to find ways to come back and come back until they get it.
So
this is why we need a unified, non-violent, Gandhian-type mass campaign of non-cooperation with the system that's seeking to enslave us, because it's no good leaving it to politicians to represent us. I mean, they're next to bloody useless, and great numbers of them are deeply corrupt, and smaller numbers of them are connected to this elite anyway.
Right, and new power-hungry people come in all the time as well, right? So, I mean, in a way, we need kind of an attitude change against how we perceive this. What I'm getting at is that we shouldn't believe that, okay, if we just that we beat, you know, let's say the Lisbon Treaty here now, things are going to settle down and we can rest again. This is almost like the agenda is like it's like the bacteria and antibodies in a human body. It's something that, you know, like an immune system, it has to continue all the time for it to work, right? We need to have a permanent kind of resistance, if you will.
Well, this is the whole situation with the true balance of power in the world. If you think about it, governments use money to impose this agenda on the people. money that the people have given to the government in taxation. Hmm. So, in effect, the government's side of things, the side that wishes to impose this Orwellian state, has limitless funds because the people it's enslaving are funding it.
That's right.
Whereas groups and people who wish to challenge the government they fund have to fund themselves as well as funding the government they're challenging. You've got, with those who are challenging this, you have groups of people who meet in front rooms or meet in small halls, whereas the government has the whole edifice of government-paid administrators to daily work to push this thing forward. So the game is rigged in a most enormous way. And if we're going to try to go through official means to challenge these things, we're wasting our time, frankly, because as you indicate, you can win a few battles here and there, as with GM food, but they'll just wait and then come back with this whole administrative army to push it through, manipulation of the media and all the rest of it,
yeah.
While the people then have to regroup and go through again all the things they've already been through, and eventually they get worn out, and eventually they get washed over by this tidal wave. That's if we do it by doing it the conventional way. We have to do it the unconventional way. The number of people who are knowingly in awareness that they are manipulating to this end in the world is tiny, tiny, compared with the 6 billion plus people on the planet, or what we're told are on the planet. So there's two things we need to do, and if we do them, and we do them with passion, and we don't take no for an answer, then this control can come down. And those two things are the communication of information at every opportunity to explain what's really going on and how the dots connect, to overcome the propaganda through the mainstream media, propaganda that is perpetrated overwhelmingly by the vast majority of journalists who themselves are clueless about what's going on and how the pieces fit.
Yeah.
And the other thing is this Gandhian mass non-cooperation with the system. Give you on a real simple level. We've had people here who've been fined hundreds of pounds for putting their wheelie bin out with their rubbish in from their home for the collectors on the wrong day. If that happened, and then every week from then on, thousands and thousands and thousands of people across the UK all put their wheelie bin out on the wrong day and kept doing it until the law failed.
Right.
If when we have microchipped wheelie bins, which were coming in this country, everyone or vast numbers took the microchip out of the wheelie bin and put it in the post back to the council, then it would have to change.
That's right.
The level at which we have to meet this, because if we go through the normal official channels, we're wasting our time, wasting our effort, and wasting our energy.
Yep, that's definitely right, and I think that's a kind of a great way to go about it in a way. That means that there need to be, of course, a consensus or a backdrop to all of this, where people kind of unite around these certain issues, and as you say, rightly so, that this has nothing to do with race or age or anything like that. This is more like, okay, do we need this? Do we want this? Is this necessary? And if not, then unite in that area during around that topic, if you will, or around that scenario, and change it. And it's very easy when you actually think of it this way, because again, as you say, the administration that it would take to actually handle an event like this, they would crash, if not financially, if everyone were taking out the microchips on these things that were sending them back, right? You know?
Yeah, the thing that is holding back the end of all this nonsense is divide and rule. The people will not unite behind a common theme, a common theme of freedom for all, because freedom doesn't come in bits. You know, either everyone's free or we don't have freedom. If someone someone has a right to say what their opinion is and another person does not have the right, then there is no freedom, because the person who thinks they have the right to give their opinion does not have the right. They have the right to give their opinion because it suits those that decide what opinions are allowed and what opinions are not allowed. That's not freedom.
Yeah.
And so it's respecting everyone's right to the rights that we demand for ourselves, and being as passionate about the right to freedom of expression, for instance, of those that we don't agree with, or those that abuse us even, as we are for the right of our own freedom of expression. That's the attitude that will bring this down. Because once you say, oh, well, it's not my problem because I'm being allowed to give my opinion, and I don't agree with that person anyway, so it don't really matter if they're stopped from speaking.
Hmm.
That's, again, leading down the road to that famous quote by the pastor in Germany: first they came for the Jews and I was not a Jew, so I did nothing. Then they came for the communists and I was not a communist, so I did nothing. Then they came for the trade unionists and I was not a trade unionist, so I did nothing. Then they came for me and there was no one left to speak out for me. This is the way that dictators, and we're looking at a global dictatorship now, pick off different groups by focusing on them and getting to a situation where other people are not at that moment affected. So people, in effect, like the biblical story of the Good Samaritan, they walk on the other side of the road and think, not my problem, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
But eventually it becomes your problem, and by that time, there's no one left to speak out for you. And this is what's happening all the time. Okay, you can focus on Muslim people. You can focus on all different groups, and oh no, I don't like them anyway. But eventually, your door knocks, and then you realize what the game has been all along. But by then, it's too late.
Indeed, and in many cases, also, I think it's kind of worth pointing out that if organizations become too big, they're in a way too easily kind of, you know, infiltrated, that there are certain other issues that you know, comes to the surface if an organization grows too large. That's why I think it's important to kind of maintain your individuality, kind of keep strong in who you are and what you believe in, but learn to work together with other people around a certain issue. And when that is one, drop it, move on, and take the next one. That's how I see that's kind of a good approach to how to beat these certain areas that we don't want to see, you know, within a country, within a state, or within our lives, you know.
Well, you have to hold your individuality, otherwise you just become a cell in an organization or a belief system or whatever. And like you say, they're not only easily infiltrated, they can be brought into internal conflict, and agents provocateurs can cause mayhem in organizations where people as a whole are giving their power to some leadership or some group of people who are in control of that organization.
Yeah.
So what we need is not more and more organizations to meet this challenge. We need organizations.
Yeah.
The coordination of non-violent non-cooperation with the system, and that means you hold your individuality, but you give your you give yourself to the issue that, like you say, that we're dealing with at the moment. But it doesn't mean that, you know, you have to give yourself away to an organization and
right.
And let it tell you what to think and let it tell you what to do.
Yeah.
It's just about cooperation between individual people to a common end, for a common reason. And, you know, you don't need a great big organization to coordinate people to, for instance, not put their or to put their wheelie bin out on the wrong day, or to take a microchip out of a wheelie bin and putting in the post to the council. I mean, you know, all people need to know is this is what's going to happen en masse, and people choose whether to join that or not.
Yeah,
it takes, you know, organizations. It takes organization. And we can bring this down if we cease to cooperate with it, because that's what we're doing. We're cooperating with the building of our own prison all the time.
Yeah.
There are people throughout governments, throughout the world, who have children and grandchildren who are going to live in this fascist global state for most of their lives. If they knew that every day they were making a contribution to that very state that's going to control their children's lives, they would be aghast and horrified. So information about what's going on and how it fits, along with a non-cooperation of non-violence, but non-cooperation with those things that are designed to enslave us, will bring this thing crashing down, because it's a house of cards. It's not some great edifice of unchallengeable power. The only power it has, in effect, is the power we give to it every day. It can come down so fast once we reach a certain critical mass of awakening, awareness, and therefore response. And we're getting closer, but we need to move quick, because this thing's moving on real fast because of this process of the more you centralize power, the more power you have to centralize quicker.
Yeah, you know, definitely. And also, you know, I think it's important to stand up for what everyone for themselves believe is right. And in a way, don't wait for everyone else to follow along with you in that regard, or you know, just operate on what you believe is right within your, you know, moral code or whatever you want to call it. And I think that the ideas kind of spread and follow along, and inspiration, if you will, helps to flow through spirit, if you will, in a wonderful way. And if someone would do something like that you mentioned before, David, like take off the microchip of the bin and send it back, whatever, and someone read about it, I think that more and more people would do it that begins to notice that. And if they consequently were, you know, arrested because of that, I think that thing would actually flow from there, and more people would actually do it. So in many cases, it takes that initial, I don't like the word sacrifice, but it takes that kind of initial, you know, action in order to get a response in a way, if you follow me.
Yeah, well, so some people have done these things, but if it's not done in some kind of unity, it doesn't mean everybody, but some kind of substantial unity, they can pick people off as individuals. And again, you know, people are wonderful at saying, yeah, mate, I'll support you, yeah, go and do it, oh, yeah, oh, no, oh, God, he's in trouble now, oh, God, no, I don't know him, do you know him? I've never met him, have you?
Right.
This attitude.
Right.
And also, it's apathy. Oh, someone else will do it. Well, actually, we're nowhere near at the moment close enough to a point where enough someone else's are doing it. So it might as well be you, because if it ain't you, it's got to be someone, because very soon we're going to pass the point of no return, because the whole process of this unfolding agenda is to shut the cell door before enough people have realized they're even in a cell. This is why they're pushing on so fast with their plans for microchipping, DNA databases and all these things, surveillance cameras, surveillance of data of various kinds. It's to create a situation where it becomes more and more difficult for, if you like, dissidents to challenge the system. This is where political correctness is coming in. Stop people having the right to express their view. It's nothing to do with protecting minorities. It's playing minorities off against each other and stopping people having the right to express an opinion. It's part of this whole process of building the prison cell while people don't realize they're actually watching it happen all around them, until the point is reached where eventually the cell door clicks and people say, we've got to do something. Oh, yeah, okay. Have you seen what's going on around? Do you ever see what's going on? And so this is why we're in this window of time now where all that's remained hidden has started to hit the surface, as it had to do for it to become part of this transformation of society that they've been working so long towards. And now it's no longer sometime over the rainbow, sometime maybe in the future. It's happening now by the day.
Yeah.
And quicker. And we have the opportunity now to see that this is not some theory, this is daily experience, and to take the action necessary to bring an end to it. If we don't, in large enough numbers, well, don't blame anyone but yourself if
that's
you've done
right.
nothing
right.
to make a contribution to this. Yeah. And then tell your children and grandchildren that that's what you did. All the best with that one, rather you than me.
Yeah, indeed. So tomorrow, July 2nd, between 10 a.m. and 11:30, people can go to the Willoughby Manor Hotel in Hull. That's correct?
Well, this is for the media tomorrow.
This is for the media.
Anyone
right.
from the media can go, yeah. And
right.
then this is the Willoughby Manor Hotel in Willoughby, near Hull. It's very simple to get from all over the northern UK, really. Then on Sunday... this coming Sunday at 1:30 at the Willoughby Manor Hotel, again in Willoughby, I'm going to be doing a public meeting, a free public meeting. People can come. They don't need tickets. They just turn up. It's a big room. And I'll be talking for an hour and a half, 2 hours maybe, and then taking questions at this election meeting.
And when is the actual election, do you know?
It's on July the 10th, a week on Thursday, which is another, you know, issue, really, because the man only resigned last week sometime. And they have rushed this election through with the date they've given it. So we've been through, I mean, I've had fantastic support. Otherwise, I couldn't have done it in the time that we've had. I mean, I only decided to stand finally when I realized the Labour Party were definitely not standing just over a week ago. And in that time, we've got all this organized and other things organized. And I live 5.5 hours from this place. And so it's been a real challenge. And but it's amazing what you can do when you focus and you don't take no for an answer. And, you know, it's going to be already it's worthwhile having done it. And it's going to be even more worthwhile by the time we get there. But they have squeezed the time for this election because they don't want a debate on this. Why would they? It's the last thing they want. They want it out the way, quietly as possible. Well, I ain't going quietly, that's for sure.
That's great. And there's quite a many few things happening around this period in July. I think there is a... someone who's putting something together in July 4th, isn't that right? There's a demonstration, a peaceful demonstration in some of the larger cities, London,
yeah,
Washington.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's great to see that kind of you know, as long as you say, David, as long as this is held within a proper context, it's peaceful, you know, and it's nonviolent. That's great to see that, you know, people coming out and
what's beginning to happen, Henrik, is what I'm seeing. Slowly but surely, and ever quicker, the movement of more and more people from anti-war, anti-Iraq war, single issue wars, if you like, to the more and more people protesting about the coordination of human control within which wars like Iraq are a part, a significant part, especially if you're an Iraqi,
yeah.
but a part of a much bigger picture. And that's extremely encouraging because I've been battling away, and others have too, to try to get the anti-war people to realize that that's an element within a much bigger picture. And more people are starting to get that. So it's great to see protests about the bigger picture of control and not just single issue protests against wars, understandable as that is.
And, you know, I know, David, that you have many more media meetings later on. You have scheduled interviews as well later on tonight. So, I mean, I want to say keep up the wonderful work to highlight these issues, David. But I want to give the last few minutes here so you can mention your website so people know where to go to see some of your books, other material that you have out there for us.
It's davidicke.com, and Icke is I-C-K-E, davidicke.com. And if people go to the headlines page, there's daily updates. In fact, several times during the day, updates of stories and articles that are relevant to all these subjects. Of course, they'll find there as the days pass up to July the 10th. Updates on what's happening in this election campaign. And we're in the process of trying to arrange for the Sunday event to be filmed, and we'll be, if we can pull that off, then we'll be sticking that on the website that people can watch for free also.
Brilliant, brilliant. And that's excellent. And I hope that many people actually do show up to this event and show your support here. And that, of course, a lot of media is attending the event tomorrow, right? Have you gotten any confirmation? Will there be any papers?
I'm not organizing that. Someone else is organizing that. So whoever turns up, turns up. But there's a lot of people have said they will, but, you know, we'll see. Whatever. You know, we have to bypass that indifference, if indifference it turns out to be, by going directly to people through the internet. So it's, and I tell you what, also, Enric, it's also encouraging. The number of mainstream journalists that now tell me privately, they do get it.
Really?
So that's the start, because over the years I've met so many who didn't even begin to get it. And there'll still be a lot there tomorrow at this press conference who don't begin to get it. But more and more are, because it's very, very difficult to continually, day after day, to deny your own personal experience. And so this is a real wonderful opportunity that we're entering in the next couple of years to lift the lid off this and to divert it from its intended goal of, everything and more that Orwell wrote about.
That's right. Wonderful work, David, and that's encouraging words, and I totally agree with you on those points, definitely. Keep us posted on what's going on, and we'd love to talk with you some more, and hopefully things work out well during this election, eh?
Okay, Enric. Well, okay. We'll do our best. That's the only thing we can do.
That's right, definitely. Okay, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, mate. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
God is a living man. You can fool some people sometimes, but you can't.